The best choice you can ever make is an informed one. Elections 2021
on 702 and Cape Talk.
13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Cape Town, are you voting on the 1st of November? And what do you want to hear from those who are trying to be the mayor of Cape Town? I am joined this evening by Hanif Hendricks, who is president of Al Jamaa and mayoral candidate for Cape Town. Hanif, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time, sir.
No, it's a pleasure, and thank you for the invitation.
Thank you so much. Let me also introduce Brett Heron to our listeners. Brett Heron is the Cape Town mayoral candidate for the Good Party. Brett, good evening to you, and thank you very much for joining us, sir.
Good evening, Aubrey. Thanks very much.
And Ferlin Christians is the Cape Town mayoral candidate for ACDP. Ferlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, let me start with Hanif. Hanif, let us know, what is Al Jamaa all about, and what is it that you are promising the people of Cape Town so that they ultimately vote for you?
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, Al Jamaa is a, you know, many political parties were formed in churches. We were formed in a mosque.
Yeah.
But we are a platform for all communities. We now have 1,200 candidates, and more than half are outside our faith. So, you know, we've proven that we are a platform for all communities. Some of our councillors are outside our faith. And we are very passionate about making Cape Town one of the best, the most equal cities in the world. At the moment, Cape Town is the drunk capital of the world, because the administration extends alcohol trading hours left, right, and center.
Drunker than Gauteng?
Sorry? No, Gauteng, they are a bit cool and moderate. But you see, the dock system was in Cape Town during the darkest days of apartheid. So that has contributed to the fact that, you know, that legacy is carrying on. And by extending alcohol trading hours. And so we want to, and this is not a religious thing, we feel that reducing alcohol trading hours will reduce alcohol harm. It will have less impact on our hospitals, and it will improve productivity. So unfortunately, for the last 15 years, under the present administration, there has been several attempts to maintain Cape Town as the drunk capital of the world. Cape Town is also, you know, there are 300 informal settlements. We have many townships. And if you go and visit these areas, it stinks, because the present government, the water treatment plants, when you pull your chain, you know, everything goes to a water treatment plant. And then they pump that through waterways where people live, where animals live, where livestock live, where horses live. And they slow poison, for example, in Khayelitsha, I read the first pages of a PhD thesis where 1 million people in Khayelitsha opposite the Zandvlei treatment plant are suffering from slow poison because of the policies of the present administration to pump poorly treated sewerage in waterways. In Masipumalele in the far south, we managed to get two determinations from the environmental director against the city. We got a damning report from the public protector, and also a damning report from the human rights. And unfortunately, we couldn't proceed to put the city officials in jail because they were non-compliant with the NEMA Act, because the DA MEC in the province, you can appeal to him, and he overturned the determinations of the environmental director. The mayor at that time, Patricia de Lowe, was sat down by the public protector and told him, you know, this is the worst living conditions I've seen in my life. You better, do something about it. And Al-Zama agreed that maybe a settlement agreement will help, and it has helped a lot now.
Sure. Khanif, I need to stop you there because I need to watch the issue of time. So basically, big issues that I'm hearing coming through from Al-Jamaa is one, the dealing with the waterworks, making sure that the waterworks, the sewage waterworks, don't go to areas such as Khayelitsha and so forth and slow poison the livestock there. But secondly, you would like to put restrictions on the times for the selling of booze, because you'd like to, taking my cue from the reasoning that was given to us during the lockdowns, you want to reduce the risks that come along with all of that. Those are the two big issues I'm hearing from you. I'm sure you've got others, but those are the two big ones that that you would like for us to ponder on, yeah?
That's correct.
All right. Let me stop there with Khanif. Brett Heron, you're from the Good Party. What do we need to understand about your aspirations for the city of Cape Town?
Well, Aubrey, I mean, Good is a new political party, but we have quite substantial local government experience amongst our leadership and many of our members and many of our candidates. And I think that there are a couple of things that we would like to tackle in the city of Cape Town. Firstly, the structuring of the city of Cape Town's budget, and in particular, how it raises its revenue. So currently, we have the COVID-19 pandemic, but we have a pandemic of unaffordability of high rates, water and electricity tariffs, where people are literally having to choose between food on the table and electricity in the the meter, and where I've come across families whose furniture and personal possessions have been attached through warrants of execution for arrears water bills. So, I mean, access to water and electricity is a basic human right and a basic service, and it should never be so unaffordable that or so expensive that it is completely unaffordable and people are denied access to it. So what we would like to tackle right away, and the timing is quite good because municipalities work on their budgets from about November. So shortly after the elections, we will be in the budget cycle, and we need to restructure the electricity tariff to reduce it, and we need to restructure the water tariff to remove the fixed levy, which was introduced as a drought levy, but we haven't had drought for two years now. So that's the one aspect.
And let me just understand, Brett. What does that mean? Does that mean that you're going to give the poorer areas cheaper electricity? And what are you going to do about the well-heeled areas? Are you going to raise their tariffs?
No, I think we need to restructure how the whole budget is financed. There's an over-reliance on profiteering on water and electricity charges. And that is a complete wrong approach to budgeting. There's the NERSA-approved tariff, and then the city of Cape Town adds a markup on that. And they've now introduced a
is that legal?
Charge also. I'm sorry?
Is that legal?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't think it is legal. I have tired the NERSA application and the response from NERSA, and I'm waiting to receive the answers. What I think is definitely illegal is what the city is currently doing with prepaid electricity, is that they are collecting debt. So if a person has a water account that's in arrears or a rates account in arrears and has a prepaid electricity meter, they are collecting the debt for the water and rates arrears using the purchase of prepaid electricity.
Which is done, I suppose, everywhere. Then it would be a national issue, I suppose, Brett.
Well, I think I don't know if it's done everywhere. It's done in the city of Cape Town. Regardless, I think it's an illegal debt collecting practice because as the debtor, you don't have the opportunity to dispute that you owe the debt. So if there is an amount owing, then the city must follow the normal debt collecting practices. But taking the law into your own hands by extracting funds when someone is expecting to get 20 units of electricity and they end up with two units, only enough to switch the stove on for half an hour, You know, that's an unfair practice, and I think it's an illegal debt collecting practice.
Right.
The other aspect that I wanted to quickly just highlight is that, you know, Cape Town has some of the most well-developed and most beautiful neighborhoods in the world, but we also have some of the worst neighborhoods and underdeveloped neighborhoods in the world. And both of these exist under one government. So we really need to decide that we have one standard of infrastructure across the city of Cape Town. Those communities that have well-developed infrastructure, we need to invest in maintaining that infrastructure. And those communities that are neglected, where the infrastructure is absent or the infrastructure is not up to the standard, we need to invest in building, repairing, and maintaining that infrastructure to raise the infrastructure so that we can have one standard of infrastructure across our entire city.
Right.
And start to invest in the underdeveloped parts of our sure. city, in particular the built environment.
Brett, I want you to think about how that money is going to actually be raised, because I suppose a lot of people would agree with you that we'd like to see more investment in the underdeveloped areas. But as I go to the next caller, please, it's going to be part of the questions that I'm going to be asking. Where's that money going to be coming from? Mm-hmm. Brett Heron from the Good Party. Let me speak to Ferlon Christians from the ACDP. Ferlon is the Cape Town mayoral candidate for the ACDP. Ferlon, thank you very much for joining us. What do we expect from the ACDP as far as Cape Town is concerned?
Yeah, thank you, Aubrey, for the opportunity. I think sure. the problem that we have is Cape Town is facing glaring inequalities, and after the DA now almost in power for 20 years, we see that things in the city are going even worse now. It's worsened over the period of time. People are not safe. People are unemployed. There's a lot of problems, inadequate housing, we have an inadequate health service, and also the transport infrastructure is a big problem. So there's a lot of problems in the city of Cape Town, but I think where we should start is with leadership. You know, we should elect leaders that will serve the people, leaders with integrity and also high corruption. Just today, I was out in the Eerste Rivier area and more areas, and the problem that people have is they say that politicians make promises and there's actually a reluctance in many communities to vote. And we, as the ACDP, had to tell them, look, we are not in government. There's people, the DA at the moment is running the city, and the inadequate services and so on comes from that. And I want to agree with Brett where we have to look at the budget, because I believe with the budget, the city is looking at certain things and not looking at the needs of the people. And if a person look at the budget, you can restructure that budget and point it to where the need really is. So I don't believe that there is insufficient money. There is enough money. It's just that the money must be correctly spent. That is a problem. And I still believe in the city, we must have a caring city. People getting eviction notices and people, like you said, you know, water behind with their water. And the sheriff come and write up their furniture. I don't believe that's a caring city. We should be a caring city, especially going through the COVID period now. We should also be a safe city. You know, the province is pumping in 1.4 billion rand in law enforcement, and yet we don't see safety on the ground. So today, again, it was these type of issues that people were raising, that they're not even safe in their own homes and those problems. So I believe it starts with leadership. I think we should look at leaders that will serve the people, bring integrity back to politics, and also get people that really wants to work and see a difference. We must really step up and get this mindset that politicians are on the gravy train and they don't care after they elect it. That must change. So it's all to do with leadership. So, and also a big problem is, I believe that in the city itself, there's a lot of officials that a person will have to get rid of, because there's also many, many rumors and reports of corruption and those type of things. So I believe you should get the structure right, you should get the leadership right, and then we work from there. The others will flow. And as I said, we have our communities not safe. They don't have adequate housing. We have got inadequate health service. I've today been at clinics, and also our transport is in a mess. So that is the thing that we want to concentrate on. But yet again, saying that we should have leaders that is credible, leaders with integrity, and leaders know what they want to do with the city of Cape Town.
So if I understand you correctly, Furlon, the anchor issue as far as you guys are concerned at the SADP, ACDP, is the issue of leadership. And you believe that from there, everything else will then cascade in a way that will produce the results that are desired by the people of Cape Town.
Yeah.
All
I
right.
don't know if you All saw, right. there was a couple of reports. The one report was Corruption Watch.
Yeah.
Report.
No, I hear you. I just wanted to get a sense of that, whether I'm with you as far as that is concerned. Eugene Botha is not necessarily the Patriotic Alliance's candidate for the mayoral position, but he speaks for the Patriotic Alliance in Cape Town. Eugene, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you so much for making us understand that. Who is your candidate for the mayoral position then?
Thank you, Aubrey. Thank you to your listeners also for tuning in.
Sure.
Yes, our mayoral candidate is Marvin John Sampson, fantastic leader. He's been a public servant for many years and really works quite hard. And unfortunately, he couldn't join you this evening because he's in another interview. I think it's a television interview.
Right.
So he just asked me to make sure that our voice is heard in this debate.
Sure.
But Marvin John Sampson is our mayoral candidate. I'm a national leader.
Right.
And I've just stepped in to share with you some of our key points.
What are your key points for Cape Town specifically? I've made the comment, Eugene, that as much as the national issues are interesting, but I'm really interested in the regional issues, the local government election issues. What is the Patriotic Alliance offering the people of Cape Town?
So, look, Aubrey, the number one thing is that everybody talks about basic services and clean governance, and those are the pillars of governing a city, and they're always on the table. It's not what we call a unique selling point. It's exactly what a government should do. So, of course, the PA will not just prioritize service delivery. It will work tirelessly every day to ensure that budgets are spent wisely to get the most value out of every rand so that we can progress, so we can see our communities progressing. As you know, across the board, the Patriotic Alliance feels every municipality has to take steps to put God back into our schools. We believe that the moral decay in our society leads to ever-increasing levels of crime and corruption and is at the heart of many of our problems. Another issue that we're seeing in Cape Town specifically is there are several illegal foreigners who have opened stores. They're not shops and corners. They're taking over industries. They're not paying their rates and taxes. They're competing unfairly against local business people. And we believe it's an inescapable truth that a country's first and only true obligation is to protect its citizens. And this isn't happening in Cape Town. And a lot of our people are sitting in desperation without work, without opportunities, because they're not being protected. We are also very focused on reducing crime. We believe that a full belly stops a bullet. So our municipalities, and we also want to really tackle the issue of recidivism. A lot of people come out of prison and go back into crime because the systems are not in place to bring them back in. And we want our municipal leaders to lobby with national government and with local institutions to try and find decent jobs for these guys to keep them out of crime. A key area for us is to create jobs. A lot of people are unemployed in Cape Town. You know, as Good said earlier on, there's some great suburbs, but there's also some suburbs that are in desperate need of upliftment. And economic development is something that's often overlooked and has been overlooked for 20 years. So, you know, we want to really focus on beneficiation of raw materials, our natural resources, specifically ocean economy. We want to really use the Department of Economic Development to support and to provide capital support for entrepreneurs. And the key thing in some of the outlying areas, you know, we always focus on the CBD, but there are other outlying areas where there are subsistence farmers who are just struggling to make ends meet on a day-to-day basis. And with proper support, we can turn those communities into commercial farming communities. And that can really turn around our unemployment statistics. And a big one for us in Cape Town, it's been touched on before, but we really want to emphasize this, is over the last 2 years, there's been a black swan event globally. This pandemic has had a hectic impact on the livelihoods of all our people across the board. And what the national government did is they gave a lot of payment holidays and grants and relief and all sorts of things to corporates, but the man on the street has not been given those grants and reliefs. And we are seeing massive overdue statements, and people are losing their homes because they haven't been able to pay water. What we've seen also is, you know, the water rates and the rates for the municipalities are not on a sliding scale. So a person in an area like Manenberg will be paying almost 25% on their salary just to keep up with the rates in water electricity, whereas a person in one of the more affluent suburbs will be paying 0.1%. So that ratio is skewed. And so, of course, it creates a lot of further problems because people are sitting down and wondering when are they going to lose their home, or when is their electricity going to be cut.
So if I understand you correctly, Eugene, that yours is really to focus on the issue of unemployment. You want to deal with the issue of illegal immigrants. You want to deal with the issue of sliding scales for different areas that are differently healed. And those would be the general issues that you guys want to look at, Eugene.
Yeah, I think it comes down to there's a lot of symptoms, but we don't want to treat the symptoms. We want to treat the cause.
Right.
And the socioeconomic issues stem from the fact that people are not being developed economically. Their communities are not being developed.
Right.
There's big marketplaces there, and they're not being unlocked.
Let me stop it there and go back to Hanif Hendricks. By the way, this is the time when I'd like to hear from the people of Cape Town itself. Help us understand whether or not our mayoral candidates are on the money and in terms of whatever it is that they're promising. But what are their prospects for success, right? What happens if there are situations where, a hung council, yeah? Are they going to be happy to go into certain coalitions? The ANC has come out quite boldly through their president to say that they won't be going for any coalitions. Will they be thinking along the same lines? I'm really interested to find out where the finances are going to be coming from for some of the projects that they are or programs that they want to institute. But also, what are their levels of, or what do they believe their prospects for success are? If you are going to vie for the position of mayor, are you serious about this, or is this just to become a kingmaker? And if you are a kingmaker, who are you likely to be a kingmaker with? Let me go back to Hanif Hendricks, and he's president of Al Jamaa, mayoral candidate for Cape Town. Hanif, one of the questions that's come through is, to what extent is your aversion to drinking and, some people are saying that the economy of Cape Town or of the Western Cape rests very strongly on the production of alcohol. Lots and lots of people are employed in that sector, and it serves to provide a lot of revenue as far as taxes are concerned. So if you want to shut that down, how are you going to replace it? Where are the people that are employed in that sector going to get the jobs? And is this not inspired by your faith specifically?
Yes, it is inspired by my faith, but we understand that we cannot impose values on other communities, and we have to use scientific arguments, medical arguments, and it has been proven during the pandemic that increasing alcohol trading hours increases alcohol harm. So it is a national...
But it obviously reduces the economic impact of that sector, doesn't it?
Yes, but if you look at the harm that it causes, and you translate it into rands, the value that we get from alcohol trade, is more than the benefits that money brings in. If you look at the cost of hospitalization, breakup of families, community accidents, you compute that, and you compute the benefits. You also have child abuse. You compute that into rand value, and you come to the decision. But is it worth for this to be part of our economy? Shouldn't we, at least stick to the national norms? Instead of increasing it from 8 hours to 20 hours a day of alcohol trading, can't we find alternatives like what Al Jamaa has done? We've engaged with the Indonesian ambassador, and he says he's got 10 million Indonesians that would like to visit Cape Town, but give us a visa when we land. And I spoke to the Minister of Tourism about it, and Cape Town is going to get a lot of Indonesian visitors, and tourism will improve. Also, agriculture. I spoke to the ambassador of Kazakhstan. They are the country with the fourth best agricultural expertise in the world. They told Cyril Ramaphosa that they prepared to help. The government didn't come forward. So when we approach them and tell them about the fact that we need investment in agriculture in the city of Cape Town, in the rural areas around it, they were very willing to assist. And I told them that we will, when I become mayor, we will assist in that regard. And even if I don't become mayor, we will lobby, and we will bring investment to Cape Town through agricultural investment.
How serious are your prospects for becoming mayor, Hanif? I mean, seriously, are you a real contender, or are you possibly a kingmaker of sorts?
Look, we have grown from 13,000 to about 40,000 in the second election, and now we're looking at 200,000 votes. Our candidates, many of them feel they will win the awards. We feel that there is an opportunity for us to co-govern. We don't want to be a kingmaker. We don't want alliances. We want to co-govern because it matches the spirit of Ubuntu, which we are trying to promote in South Africa. Just imagine the ANC phones me a Saturday morning, 11 o'clock from an NEC meeting, and tells me, look, we didn't submit a candidate list for the PR list. Are you prepared to assist? And we will tell our voters to vote for Al Jamaa. Now, that is not new to us. The NFP did it as well. In the last election, and 15,000 of the members voted for us, and we gave them the two seats in Escort. Hmm. So we are quite willing to co-govern. We don't want the balance of power. If we're part of co-governing, we transfer the power to the people. You have a situation now where the deputy mayor decides where the money goes. And the,
will you co-govern with? Will you go? Will you
nominated in the rubber stamps?
Will you co-govern with the DA?
We will co-govern with anyone that gives me the mayoral chain. If you don't give me the mayoral chain, don't even knock on my door.
Hanif Hendricks of Al Jamaa. Brett, your prospects for success. Where's the money going to come from for the restructuring of the budget? Because some people are saying, well, restructuring fundamentally means that you're going to need more money. But I'm sure you've got a totally different story as far as that is concerned. What are your prospects for success?
Well, I mean, let's start with the budget question and the restructuring. I think restructuring the budget doesn't mean requiring more money necessarily. Restructuring the budget means assessing the budget that is in place for what are the real priorities and what are not the priorities. So to choose to spend 44 million rand on an impoverished community rather than dismantling pristine infrastructure in Greenpoint for a Formula E, an electric vehicle Formula E motor race. Those are poor judgments made in terms of the budget. So when I say we must reassess the budget or restructure the budget, I'm talking about implementing zero-based budgeting, which means assessing every single item in the budget as to whether it is still a priority and is not just simply in the budget because it was historically there. And let me say that the city does have the finance to implement a massive infrastructure program right now. Right now, the city of Cape Town has almost 20 billion rand in the bank. It is required by National Treasury to have about 4.5 billion rand in the bank as reserves. So it is hoarding cash. A lot of that cash has come from over-recovery on water and electricity tariffs. And a government's role is not to be a cash hoarder or cash investor. That money should be spent on services and infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's cash in the bank, and the city of Cape Town has a very, very healthy bank balance sheet. I mean, we have, if I just look at the council flats, which are in appalling condition, where literally the sewage from the third floor is flowing into the ground floor unit while the people are in their flat. So we have 65,000 council rental flats in the city of Cape Town. If they have a value of, say, 200,000 rand each, that's 13 billion rand worth of assets. So we also have a balance sheet on which we can raise finance if we need it in order to invest in infrastructure. And investing in infrastructure creates jobs. It was Roosevelt's plan when the Americas were trying to get themselves out of the Great Depression, and it worked. And here we have a need for infrastructure, and we have a funding to implement an investment in infrastructure.
Right. So talk to me about your prospects for success. Are you really believing that Brett Herron, come the 2nd of November, maybe not the 2nd, but after the counting of the votes, will emerge the mayor of the city of Cape Town?
Well, I mean, that is for the voters to decide. I really believe that it is possible, and we're putting in every effort to make it achievable. We're going out to communities. I'm out in communities all day and all night. And I'm asking them to lend us their vote on the 1st of November so that we can bring change to the city of Cape Town. I'm asking them to consider the fact that the city of Cape Town has been governed by the same party for the past 15 years and ask them to look around them and see whether they have made progress in their lives, whether their communities are progressing, whether they feel safer, whether their children have got jobs, whether they have a hope for the future. Because if they don't make a change on the 1st of November 2021, the next opportunity to make that change is in November 2026 or possibly even February 2027, given that it's a five-year term plus 90 days. So it is really an urgent and critical moment for people to decide whether they want to continue to support a party only in order to keep another party out. And I'm asking people to vote for something rather than vote to keep, in this case, the ANC out, which is a large part of where the DA gets its support from.
Are you happy to go into coalitions with any of the bigger parties? Should they, I mean, let's say the DA wins or the ANC wins or even the EFF, are you happy to go into a coalition? What will your conditions be? Are there any deal breakers?
There will definitely be red line items that we will be putting on the table if we have to negotiate coalitions or whether we have to negotiate minority governments that we support. We have been in coalitions before. I have served on a coalition mayoral committee in the city of Cape Town when we were part of the Independent Democrats. And one thing is absolutely clear, and the lesson that I certainly learned from that time was that we were regarded in that coalition as voting fodder, and we had very little influence in policy outcomes. And we will never enter a coalition again where we do not get something for the people who entrusted us with their vote. So we will have red line items.
Brett, thank you very much. Phil and Christians, your prospects for success, where are you going to get the money for the programs that you guys are promising the people of Cape Town?
Yeah, look, it's very simple. It's not a difficult exercise. It's not looking for more money. If you look at the municipal managers upgrading something like 750,000. If you go to every department, it's between 800 and a million rand for upgrading of equipment, furniture. And there's enough money. I mean, if you look at the Formula E Grand Prix, 44 million wasted money. So there's enough money. It must just be restructured. But let me just come to the point. The point is, I've said to you, the problem here is leadership. Courtney Sampson, that was the IEC chairperson in the Western Cape, said that we don't have enough honesty and integrity. So that is where it starts. And people, there's also reports of corruption in the city of Cape Town, and that's why the African Christian Democratic Party is built on strong biblical principles and seeks to honor God and put the people in the center of the needs. We believe with that leader, servant leaders with integrity that hate dishonest gain will make the difference, and we will have enough money to service the people of Cape Town. Another thing that I just need to tell you, Aubrey, is that we also the only party that we are saying no to mandatory vaccines. We are also concerned that city employers will be maybe forced to be vaccinated, and we are taking a strong stance against forced vaccines. So we have a clear picture for prosperity for the city, and we believe when we have honest leaders ruling the city will be attractive. We will be able, and a safe city will attract investors all over. And we still believe we can look at the yesterdays of Cape Town and see it as the most beautiful city of the world. But the problem is money is not well spent in the city budget. Money is not widely spent. And we as the ACDP, first of all, I mean, I can give you reports after reports, but Courtney Sampson also said, he said, it is getting worse, and I'm quoting him, it is getting worse because it's badly managed by the city of Cape Town. So we're talking about getting rid of bad management, getting rid of dishonest leaders, getting rid of leaders that's there to pocket their own, to fill their own pockets. So I believe if we start there, we should have a Cape Town that everybody can be proud of. And like I said in previous interviews, we are not in the pocket of gangsters. We don't associate with gangsters. We will get the city right. And a safe city is a city where people want to invest. And we know we need to get and attract the numbers to come and invest into Africa. So we're very clear with our mandate and prospects as mayor. We believe with our stance, we are not a new kid on the block of yesterday. We're in existence for a long time. We have in the city of Cape Town, in Tshwane, in Joburg, in Nelson Mandela Bay, in Nice, we had Michael positions all over.
Yeah.
We have a
but Phil, on here's the confusing thing about the ACDP. I mean, you guys, you're absolutely correct. You're not new kids on the block. You're not rookies. How come your message hasn't resonated enough with the electoral populace for you guys to ascend, to make some real mark in any elections? Why? What is it that you're not doing right?
I've now put out so many volunteers, so many workers to inform people, because I believe people has been lied to. People has been lied to say this. Don't vote for smaller parties. It's a wasted vote. Keep the ANC out. And we are telling voters this time around, you're voting for a person. First, your ward candidate, and then you vote for proportional representation. So the proportion of the party receives, that is what they will get. So these lies, every election, 2011, 2016, local government elections, there's lies going out, and people are scared. So the DA is very fond of using fear-mongering tactics to tell people to keep the ANC out. And we just need to educate our voters. Our biggest problem in the past was that people didn't know better. And now we're educating people. We're telling them the ACDP and those type of things.
Ferlin,
so we are getting the message out.
Let me let you stop there. Ferlin, Christians, I'd like to hear from the people of Cape Town. You listening to all of these political parties? Do they resonate with you? Do they make any sense? Help me out. to understand whether or not any of these political parties are hitting the high notes for you, so that perhaps come the 1st of November, you will lend them your vote. Eugene Buerta, your prospects for success, and where's the money going to be coming from?
Okay, Aubrey, yeah, thanks. So look, let me deal with the prospects of success first. I think I want to highlight the fact that over the last five by-elections, we beat the DA four times. And I'm mentioning that because the Democratic Alliance are governing the city of Cape Town for now. So what we're seeing is, we call it the green train, but it's a groundswell of support for the Patriotic Alliance. And it began in Reveille, it flowed over into El Dorado Park. And even in Ennerdale, even though we didn't win that ward, we did defeat the DA in that ward in terms of the numbers. And so that movement has just progressed and grown, and we're the fastest growing party in the country right now. And our message is really resonating with our audience. And a big part of our audience is living in the Western Cape, and specifically in Cape Town. And we've been working for years in the Western Cape and in Cape Town to try and get our message through. And we didn't stand on a soapbox and yell populist statements. We were working in the communities, and we strove to find leaders on the ground who were public servants at heart, not just politicians who had slick sounding speeches. So that took time to build, but the infrastructure is there. The teams are on the ground. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of good leaders walking away from other political parties coming towards the Patriotic Alliance because they can see that what we're doing is sincere, it's genuine. We're there for the people, we're there for the man on the street. We want to see change. We're not just saying things in order to get votes. We could have done that in 2016, we could have done that in 2014. We've never done that, we're not doing that now. What we say is what we do. We hold to our word. So we're very confident about winning in Cape Town, if not the 51%, at least enough that when it comes to coalition, we will be able to also have red line items.
Is that because of the very strong colored demographic in Cape Town? A lot of people have said that the Patriotic Alliance has developed a rhetoric that is specifically aimed for the colored vote. Would you agree with that assessment?
I think a lot of people are calling us a colored party. That's incorrect. We have leaders from all race groups across the country, and our membership split is quite interesting in terms of the demographics. It is true, though, that we are speaking to a colored audience, and a lot of colored communities are hearing what we're saying because it's blatant. You just have to listen to all the other representatives on here this evening, that colored communities have been left behind. And you can see it, any rational human being walking through the different communities can see the gap that has been developed and the service delivery that's fallen behind over the years. So all we're saying is that has to be put on the agenda, and the traditionally colored communities have to be invested in and brought up to date. You can't unify South Africa if you're going to leave whole population groups behind.
And is that where the Patriotic Alliance is feeling that that you may actually get 51% precisely because your message really resonates with the colored community, which is quite big in Cape Town, I would imagine.
Correct. Yeah. Look, it is about the numbers, and the numbers are showing us that we're getting the support from the right areas. And because we are resonating with those communities, because we are unashamed about it. We're not ashamed about the fact that we want to redress and address the issues that have been allowed to fester.
What exactly are you not ashamed about, Eugene?
We're not ashamed that we are going to develop the colored communities, that we're going into those areas with these strategies, these ideas that we have around economic development and alternative ways of solving the crime challenges, and also a new fresh look at how to, well, probably not a new fresh look, but just looking at the drug issue from a point of view of getting the user to say no to drugs rather than getting into wars.
Sure,
so,
Eugene.
Sorry,
let me just... that link is a bit problematic, don't you think? We're not ashamed to say that we are speaking to the colored community, and then immediately after that, the drugs. Isn't there a rather unfortunate connection that you're making there?
No, I think what I see, maybe you misunderstood or maybe you misheard me. What I was saying is that we're speaking to the colour communities. We're speaking about job creation, number one, dealing with the challenges of the socioeconomic challenges. We are speaking about the crime regarding recidivism. So we want to make our communities safer. We know that the issue of drugs and gangs is a big issue in the communities, and we are going to bring an approach to that to solve that problem. And we want to take an approach of educating the community and working on a no to drugs campaign. Okay. So I don't think I'm trying to connect colored communities to drugs. We understand the issue and we want to address those issues.
Yeah. It just for a second there, it sounded dangerously approaching that. So the demographic that you guys were are looking to the colored community. Hanif, a specific community or demographic that you guys are speaking to?
Look, I am a homeboy of Pine Lynch. I hope the whites in Pine Lynch will vote for me, and that will increase my success of being the mayor of Cape Town. If they look at my track record in the liberation struggle, in the corporate world, in the trade union movement, and also now in parliament, I was also 7 years.
It's not a defined demographic. It's not a colored demographic. It's not a business demographic. It's not a religious demographic, if I understand you correctly.
You're quite correct. Of our 1,200 candidates, you can represent, every sort of so-called racial group in the country.
All right. So it's across the board. Hanif, thank you so much. Brett, a specific demographic you guys are speaking to?
No, Aubrey. I mean, we are contesting all 116 wards in Cape Town with a unique candidate in each ward. So we are going full out to win as many wards as we can, and we are contesting all neighbourhoods and all communities, regardless of the predominance of the race in those wards.
Brett Heron of the Good Party and Furlong Christians. You're a Christian party. Are you focusing purely on the Christians?
No, we're not focusing purely on the Christians. Although we build on strong biblical foundations, other faiths and other people have seen the values, and they're voting for us because of values. Everybody wants integrity. Everybody wants honesty. So irrespective of, I have friends and families that are different religions, and they're voting for us because of values.
Furlong, thank you very much. Furlong Christians of the ACDP, Brett Heron of the Good Party, Hanif Hendricks of the Al-Jamaa Party, and Eugene Buerta of the Patriotic Alliance. Cape Town, you let us know.